about half past the hour, past 8 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone of Central Texas, and we're Broken Road Radio. And pleased to have joining us Dr. Don Clark. Don talks to us about every Tuesday morning. We learn more things from this man, and over the past couple of months, we learned a whole lot about Genesis. We've traveled from the creation, the inception of it all, clear to the founding of the Jewish peoples. And now we're going back to, I want to say, meat, but I'm not referring to the dinosaur. You understand that. Don is a biochemist, member of the Board of Creation Moments, and a vintner as well in Central Texas, just a couple hundred miles from us here. And we typically address matters of biblical creation. We've done that for about 7 years on the air now, and in some strange way, it feels comfortable to be getting back to dinosaurs, Don. You found this one, yeah?
It is, yes. And I'm glad there was an article out there that was about a new discovery. Actually, it was discovered, I think it was discovered in 2011, if I'm reading this article right, but they didn't really talk about it until 2017. And we've got a new dinosaur, a new discovery to talk about, and what the implications are.
Well, this was a land roaming dinosaur, a plant eating dinosaur that was found way out at sea. And we're not talking about bones here. This is a fossil, correct?
It's a fossil. It's a very well preserved. As a matter of fact, that's the best thing about it is the authors say it's one of the best preserved dinosaurs in the world.
Now, but it's mineralized, so it's not some. And we've talked about dinosaurs in the past where they've been able to find soft tissue, but that was from bones, right? Not from fossils.
Well, they call it a fossil. However, this dinosaur, which is a nodosaur, and so it's a scaled dinosaur. It included skin in scale preservation, intact horn sheets, and its original shape. So it still has skin, and it still has scales, and it still has the contents of its stomach so well preserved, they were able to identify its contents.
Well, what makes this find so different, though? Is it because of where it was found versus where it probably lived?
Because of its well preservation. I mean, we have a lot of dinosaurs that are preserved, and of course, you know, we've got mastodons that are completely preserved, but this one, I found this one, their description rather amusing. They say, was deposited in a Clearwater formation, which is a lower crustacean sandy unit filled with plenty of other marine fossils. And this is off the, off the coast of Canada. They're basically by saying it was found in the Cretaceous sandy unit, they're saying it's from the early Cretaceous period.
This is a land-dwelling dinosaur found at sea with marine dinosaurs.
You're right. All kind of jumbled together, except this guy happened to be more intact than what they usually find. Now, the early Cretaceous period is 140 million years ago, or at least that's what's claimed. It's called Cretaceous period because there's the sediment or the deposits that these sea creatures mainly are found in. It just has a lot of sea creatures, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a minute. But they said that this one was found in early Cretaceous period, and this is what they supposed, this 29,000, 2,900 pound or basically a ton and a half. Behemoth died close to the shore, and its body drifted out to sea. Eventually, the body settled to the ocean floor, where it became preserved in mud. Fortunate for us, that is sand, really, is a patch of early Cretaceous real estate now known as the Clearwater Formation. So that's taken directly out of their article. And there's a couple of interesting things just in these statements. One is that, okay, so the picture that they're trying to give you is that you've got this ton and a half dinosaur kind of foraging on land, then it dies close to the water, and then it kind of just drifts out to sea, and then finally deposits, and we're so fortunate that mud covered it somehow, and it didn't get eaten up by other sea creatures, which would normally have happened. So
sounds kind of romantic. It's like a Viking funeral. This thing just drifted out to sea.
Exactly.
And
well preserved. I mean, so how does that happen? I mean, if a fish dies, or if anything dies in the water, it's not long before it's either eaten up by other fish and other sea creatures. And if it happens to float down, because a dead creature will float to the surface, it's not going to sink down to the bottom of the ocean. But this one, it happened to sink down to the bottom of the ocean. And it was pretty much fully formed. Voila, it's well preserved in this sandy formation. So we've got a couple of points. One is, okay, you can't have a dinosaur just floating out to sea and slowly sinking and then being covered by mud. I mean, it had to be a catastrophic event in order to make a creature so well preserved. Like I said, if anybody who's ever been near a body of water and seen a dead fish floating on the surface, that fish is not going to be in good shape. It's going to be losing its scales, and then it's going to be losing its flesh, both from bacteria, but more importantly from the fish, from the live fish that are around it. And that would have happened, with this guy as well. I mean, there's no reason why one would suppose that somehow this creature survived the attack of live sea creatures. It just wouldn't have happened.
So just how scientific is this description of this floating out to sea?
It's not scientific at all. It's just it's imagined. It's a story. We got to explain this somehow. since we have an evolutionary background, things happen slowly and not quickly. And so we're explaining it from a evolutionary point of view, that this creature just gently, settled down to the bottom, and then mud covered it up, or a sandy mud, if you will, covered up over a period of time. It's impossible. That couldn't have happened. It wouldn't have been preserved. So what did happen then? And why is the Cretaceous period so full of sea life? Because it's evidence of a global flood. And if you have, for example, if you have, now, here's another story. We don't know exactly what happened, but here's a more plausible explanation as to how this particular dinosaur got preserved so well in this clear water formation. You had a global flood, and as we've discussed before, the Earth is breaking up into the various continents, so there's a tremendous amount of energy being released in that, which creates tremendous tsunamis. And the tsunamis, this guy is eating, foraging on the coast of the New Americas, and a tsunami comes along and sweeps him and others, other creatures that happen to be in the way, into the water, covering it with all of the silt and the particles that the tsunami is carrying, and sweeping it out into sea and depositing it in this newly formed now Cretaceous formation called Clearwater Formation. So Clearwater Formation, it got formed at the time of the flood. It trapped a lot of marine sea creatures, but it also trapped land creatures that were on the shore, which would make sense as a tsunami, as a big wave. Big, we're talking probably 600 to maybe 800 feet. That's how much energy there was available at that time.
Does the word tsunami appear in evolutionary language? I'm wondering, because you keep picturing the story of evolution in millions and billions of years, and that doesn't seem to account for things like earthquakes and volcanoes and tsunamis. It's much too slow.
Well, yeah, evolution is much too slow in order to say that there was a cataclysm. Of course, us creationists understand that there was a fantastic cataclysm called the global flood, and all of these post-flood events, took place because of everything that was taking place. The earth was being reshaped. Not only was there water all over the face of the earth after the flood, and it took a while for that water to subside, but you had these tsunamis, volcanic activities, kicking dust and volcanic debris up into the atmosphere, which was blocking the sun. A lot of moisture in the air was causing the ice ages that we know of today. The creation time frame is a lot shorter. I mean, instead of 140 million years ago, we're talking about 4,000 to 5,000 years ago, 4,500 mm-hmm. years ago. I mean, so you would expect to find sea creatures and land creatures, for example, well-preserved. If they get buried very, very quickly, you would expect to find skin on them. You would expect to find scales on them. And that's indeed what you find. So we don't know exactly what happened to this nodosaur, but the more logical explanation was that it was trapped in a tsunami that had a lot of silt and sand and mud in it, and got dragged out, a certain distance from the then seashore, and formed this deposit. And these type of things you find all over the world. It's not just, here we got it, outside of Alberta, Canada. It's all over the world. You find the same story. I mean, the same events. You've got these marine, a lot of marine mammals, marine, whether it be shells and stuff, or actual fish and things, all jumbled up. And then every now and then you have a land creature mixed up with it. And so this is, while this is a very well-preserved specimen, a land specimen, it's not an isolated case. And, we can explain it better, not from an evolutionary point of view, but from a creation model and the genesis history, if you will, of a global flood and the events subsequent, to the global flood. So this goes very well with what we, just went through in Genesis man's emergence from the ark in the civilizations that formed after that. This happened sometime after the Ark probably landed, or and then you know, began the Ice Age, and but these tsunamis and the volcanoes were still going on for hundreds of years after the actual flood and after Noah and his family.
Not to mention the breakup of the continents, which happened during the same period.
Yes, and the breakup of the continents is causing all of this disruption to take place.
You can imagine shorelines falling away within minutes or hours, as opposed to hundreds of thousands of years. It seems to me that the main, aside from the point of creation, you know, a Big Bang or a single cell creature crawling out of the ocean and sprouting legs, the big difference between the creation view, the biblical creation view, and the evolutionary creation view is the time problem.
Well, there is the time issue, and of course, you know, if things have evolved, then you need deep time in order to allow, end quote, you know, time for the things to evolve. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, even in the evolutionary story, you have these explosions, these periods in the layers of the rock that have all kinds of creatures in them, and they just, whether they're plants, but plants and animals, and they just appear on the scene in a particular layer. And so you got explosive periods of evolution taking place, which looked like in a relatively short period of time. And then you get kind of dormant periods, and then again, you know, another explosive periods. So so the evolutionists changed their story from slow and steady progress to these explosive periods. And so they called it punctuated evolution. So they kind of changed their story. But all they're seeing in these various layers is the various post-events after the flood and the various tsunamis that took place. And then the post-tsunami, the post-flood events of the Ice Age, and then the ice melting, and then those creating big canyons like we have in Bryce Canyon and the Grand Canyon here in the United States. The geologists have a hard time explaining these things. The paleontologists have a hard time explaining how there could be such a well-preserved dinosaur with its skin on and its scales on and the contents of the stomach. Containing all kinds of plant life, including flowers, and they're so well preserved that they can identify them, and spores and different things. So, it's amazing to me. Of course, you know, I had to become a Christian first before I believed in creation. Mm-hmm. I had the evolutionary story down pat, but it's amazing to me, all of the evidence, and the evidence just keeps mounting up. The more research that's done, the more discoveries that are found, it's just adding to the creation story. It's not adding to the evolutionary story. It's taking away from the evolutionary story, because these folks are astonished that, you could have such a well-preserved specimen. And we don't know how it got there, but apparently it just kind of drifted off into sea, and it had a very gentle burial, and everything got preserved. I mean, it's amazing.
You know, if evolution were science based, you would think that as evidence accumulated against the basic theory, that theory would become modified, if not thrown out, and you start again from scratch. What it suggests to me is that evolution is not so much science, it's closer to philosophy or even religion.
Well, it's certainly a belief system, not based on facts. Yes, species or kinds. Kinds don't change. Species, we have different species, but that's just a nomenclature. That's just a naming system. We call one species of this particular animal, different than this other species because of coloration or because it's got, you know, different size fins or, you know, different size beaks. We call it a different species. Well, you know, that's just the wonderful creation that God created, that we can remain a kind but have all kinds of variations within a kind. Just take the humankind, for example. We've got all kinds of variation within our humankind, not to mention skin color, but, you know, all kinds. You know, people look different, and some people look the same, and usually within family units, you have people that look the same. They've got genes that are related more closely, but we've got such variation. The dog species is another one. We got so many dogs, from little tiny dogs to big dogs, and we call them different species. Because they look different, the genes have separated and isolated themselves. But that's all post-creation.
Yeah, you bring up the naming, the nomenclature. That seems to be such a powerful thing in retrospect. One thinks that it accepts names sometimes instead of evidence. Because I guess somebody in the past named it such or classified it as such. So you have to accept that. It's part of the system. And that's how it was described to me growing up, going through school, through science classes. It's a system. It's a system of naming, and it's factual. All it is making up a word. I mean, we give it more power than it deserves.
Yes, and it's a classification, you know, system. It's a way of I've got some red marbles. I'm going to put those over here. I've got blue marbles, they go over there, and there's some cat eyes. And, you know, we separated those things when we were kids, and we traded marbles, and some were bigger marbles than others. But that's just us as humans. But we like to categorize things and separate things and keep things in order. Nothing wrong with that, but let's not say that, this creature evolved from that creature just because we gave it a different name and because it looks different and it's a different color. I mean, that's just a wonderful diversity within God's creation, and we should look at it that way. It's fine to classify things because it helps describe what we're talking about, and when you go and say that this one evolved from that one because we classified it that way, we've gone too far, and our thinking is not as clear as it should be, if you will.
I think evolution is reminiscent of a huge jigsaw puzzle, and they've got it all together except for the last piece, which doesn't fit.
It
so you, you
fit.
Pound yeah. on that sucker till it gets, and then you say, "Ah, there it is." And you forced an untruth on a truth. Don, we thank you for joining us and exploring this topic with us again, and we'll look forward to next week. Dr. Don Clark, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website. That's creationmoments.com. And at Creation Moments, you'll find a wealth of information that supports the biblical story of creation. And it's not just rumor, fact, legend and folklore. It's scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. And it's worth your time and effort to get into that. Don, again, thank you. Have a great week. We'll see you next week.
All righty. Very good. So long.
Bye-bye.